97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, CARE FC, the newly formed College Athletes Rights and Empowerment Faculty Coalition. Our guest, Kane Coulter, former quarterback at Northwestern and co-founder of CAPA, the College Athletes Players Association, which is affiliated with CARE FC. Kane is talking to us from Boulder, Colorado. Kane, that's a lot of alphabet soup there. CARE FC, and your group, and there are a couple of other groups. So basically, what you have in common with CARE FC is that both groups are advocating for the rights of college players. What sort of rights?
Well, there's three basic aspects that we're looking at, and one is the first one, and the one that is most important to us is medical support. Right now, college athletes aren't guaranteed to have their medical expenses paid for, and that's the first thing that we need to tackle. The second thing is academic support. In the revenue sports, football and men's basketball, only they're graduating. A lot of them are getting these watered-down degrees, and it's really not setting them up for success down the road. And then finally, financial support. Most players with the stipend checks that they're given, they're living below the poverty line, actually. And, they're the ones who are bringing in this massive amount of revenue, and I think that we all know that they deserve a portion of that.
All right, so let's concentrate on the money side of things because that's where the discussion always seems to go. The NCAA tournament, the basketball tournament that we're in right now, is going just in rights fees, not concessions or anything like that, just rights fees, is going to generate $750 million to the NC2A and its member institutions. They're saying that football and men's basketball players, primarily in those two sports, deserve a cut of that action.
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of people are phrasing the question wrong. It's not whether student-athletes should be paid, because they're already paid in the form of a scholarship. And now it just becomes, are they going to get a fair share of what they deserve and what they generate? And, what our groups are advocating for is not salaries. And, that's what a lot of people jump to, and that's what a lot of people disagree with. But we don't even disagree with paying the players big salaries. What we want to see is an educational trust fund, where a big portion of the TV rights, like you talked about, is split evenly among every player, and they're able to tap into that once they graduate. And that's just going to incentivize the guys to graduate and do nothing but good.
All right, there have been a couple of moves recently, the coverage of the full cost of attendance, at least for the Power Five conferences. Here at UNC and a couple of other places, something akin to Tar Heels for Life, that you can come back, finish your degree whenever you want to. Are those steps in the right direction, and are they enough of a step in the right direction?
They are steps in the right direction, but they aren't enough. And, the average time it takes just a regular student to finish college is 6 years. And right now, some schools just started guaranteeing four-year scholarships, but a lot of these schools are expecting players to balance a full-time academic schedule with 40, 50 hours a week dedicated to their sports and get that all done in 4 years. It's ridiculous. So a lot of the guys, when they don't graduate, if they do have that opportunity to come back and finish their degrees, that's definitely a positive step in the right direction. But it's not enough, and there definitely needs to be more.
All right, so you led a fight at Northwestern to allow the football team, players on the football team, to unionize. And the regional National Labor Relations Board agreed with that. And then, of course, it's now at the national NLRB, and that seems to be sort of stuck in the mud right now.
Correct. Well, the regional NLRB decision is kind of it's stuck right now, and then that's kind of the precedent that's set. So it was a huge victory, and, we were allowed to have a vote for a union at Northwestern, and it definitely has put a lot of pressure on the NCAA. Northwestern then put in a request for review, which is actually similar to an appeal. So we're just awaiting that right now. But We've definitely got a lot of movement with what we've done over there, and you start to see some big changes from the NCAA, and those guys are, I think they take it as a real threat, and they should.
Yeah, Kane, it seems like the U word, union, really kind of polarizes people. I think it was 75% of people surveyed said college athletes should not be allowed to join a union. You know, I'm really iffy about anything being off limits to anyone as long as it doesn't hurt somebody else. Mm-hmm. But is it advisable to be in a union? Is there not a better way?
No, you know, my the guy I've been working on with this, and a good friend of mine, Ramogi Huma, has been at this for over a decade, and he's exhausted, you know, all these different avenues to get the NCAA to change things themselves, and it's been clear that they're not. You know, he's been met with shut doors at every different idea that he's proposed. So, you know, the blueprint's already set in multi-billion-dollar sporting industries, which is exactly what the NCAA is. The way that players protect themselves and have a voice with leverage is through a union. It's through the NFLPA, it's through the NBAPA, and Major League Baseball, hockey leagues. That's how these players have a voice, and that's how they get the protections that they need and deserve, is through a union. And the NCAA is no different. It's a million-dollar sporting industry. As much as they want to say that they're all about academics, you know, you pointed to how much money that they're bringing in, and that definitely is the priority for them. And so players need a voice. They need a seat at the table when these policies that concern their academic, you know, medical and financial support is going to be made. So they need a seat at the table. And through a union, that's the only way they're going to get it.
Sports Focus will be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Kane Coulter about unionizing, about players' rights, and many other things. Kane, when you were at Northwestern, you've since graduated, and you first announced the intent to look into a union, you referred to the NC2A as a dictatorship.
Correct.
Is it a dictatorship?
It is. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, I think it's similar and comparable, but, you know, essentially what they're doing is creating a group of second-class citizens, and they're creating the policies that they must follow without any input from the students. And, you know, that's the biggest thing that we're trying to change. And I mentioned it earlier, is the players need a seat at the table, and they need a voice, and a voice with leverage where it matters. And right now, you know, all these changes that are being made, nobody is asking the players, and a player is not on the committee, the board, or anything like that, to where they could have a say in what's going on. And so, you know, that's exactly what needs to change.
Kane, I wanted to ask you about APU. Back during your senior season, I believe it was, you wore an arm wristband with the letters APU. A few other players did that. It stood for All Players United, that, you know, we need to band together and fight for our rights. Only a few players wore those. 50 faculty members have signed on to be part of CARE FC. 50 is a pretty minuscule number when it's compared to how many faculty members there are in the country. Where's the outcry?
You know, I think this is just the beginning. And, you know, on the player's perspective, you really have to look at the power structure and how much input the coaches have in matters like that, what they can wear on game day, what they can't, if they could wear this band or not, or you know, a different band. The players really, the coaches really dictate all of that. And you know, if a player wants to do something that's kind of stepping over the line, they're really putting it at risk. You know, possibly their playing time, you know, their relationship with the coach and things like that. So it's a scary road to travel. But you know, the support from people across the nation and other players, and then faculty groups, as the one we're about to talk about, is huge, and it's really going to, I think, create an atmosphere where more and more players are able to stand up and aren't in fear. But yeah, you know, I think this is just the beginning, and I think you'll be able to see more and more advocacy groups and more people stand up and really support the cause. So I'm looking forward to where it goes.
All right, Kane, here's a statement from CARE FC. part of the website. It's quoting here Walter Byers. Today, professional coaches, professional managers, and money-minded presidents have total control. It is time to give back to the students who play sports the freedoms they deserve. At a minimum, they are entitled to the freedoms enjoyed by their fellow students. Kane, that was 1995, 20 years ago. Things haven't changed in 20 years. What hope do you have that they're going to change in the next 5 or 10?
We have a lot. You know, we're making a lot of progress. And specifically the avenue that we're trying to take, it takes, it's collective bargaining. The NCAA now can't just sit back and make changes when they want to or when they feel like it's appropriate, because I think we all see that those changes are never going to be made. So once you put the pressure on them and you force them into making these changes, you've already seen since the big things take place, schools and conferences guaranteeing four-year scholarships, some changes to other policies. And, these are baby steps, but, you know, you're seeing progress and a lot more progress than there has been in the past.
Another part that comes from the CARE FC website, and again, it's quoting Byers, who was the head of the NCAA, talked about the term student athletes. And that was a term that they came up with so as not to have to pay workers' compensation.
Absolutely.
Is that one of your main contentions, that we get hurt, we're out on our own?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, they've done a great job at cost management and them not having to pay workers' compensation, insurance, or anything like that. They're saving a lot of money, and they're making a lot of money. So it's kind of crazy when you think about it, because when you go to a football game, let's say, the coaches are covered by workers' comp if they, fell down or got injured. The people serving peanuts in the stands are covered by workers' comp, all these different employees. But the people who are at the highest risk of injury, who are providing the entertainment for those games, aren't covered at all. And it's scary to think about that you could be injured wearing your school's colors, bringing in a lot of money, and not have your medical expenses paid for, and especially down the road. So a lot of these injuries that the guys are going to suffer from, they're chronic. They don't just go away, and they definitely need that support.
Kane, I think a whole lot of people would agree that, if you get hurt playing sports and you're representing an institution, that institution ought to take care of you. Okay.
Absolutely.
The thing that comes up, though, that people really have some qualms about is the whole payment deal. You know, is there a paycheck involved? Is there extra money involved? And I've heard the argument espoused that a college degree is worth about $1 million in earning potential. And you know, if you were on scholarship, you got that degree essentially for free. Isn't that enough?
Every athlete doesn't get their opportunity at an education for free. Whatever scholarship they've definitely earned, and it's not just given. It's not charity. They put 40 and 50 hours a week in work, and they're generating a lot of money. And guys like Johnny Manziel, Tim Tebow, the amount of money that they made for them school far that they made for their schools far outweighs how much the cost of attendance was at their schools and what that scholarship will bring them. So, I think there is a proper way to form a compensation plan, as I talked about earlier, and I think it's that educational trust fund. And, tying it in with education, incentivizing the guys to graduate, and almost creating like a retirement account that's equally dispersed between every player, to me is a no-brainer. The coaches are making $6 million, and nobody really has a problem with that. But having an educational trust fund set in place for the players, now it's going to ruin college sports. I think it's pretty hypocritical.
Sports Focus will be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with former Northwestern quarterback Kane Coulter about compensation in various forms for student athletes. Kane, you've mentioned a couple of numbers, 50 hours, 60 hours. I thought the NCAA had a rule that you could spend no more than 20 hours at your sport each week.
Yes, they do, and that rule is 20 countable hours, and what the NCAA deems as countable hours is really at their discretion. So I'll give you an example of a week in the season. You know, you go through probably about 20 hours of practice, and then that weekend that you're traveling, the NCAA doesn't count the 5 or 6 hours it might take you to from a bus ride to go to the place that you're playing, or the time back, or meetings there, or, you know, team meals and all these different requirements that you have.
All right, let me ask you about the travel part of it. Isn't it possible that you could have a book and be studying on the plane or on the bus?
Not really. You know, the way that we did it, you know, a lot of times we had, football tests where we'd have to, you know, fill out a test about how well we knew our game plan that week. And, you know, once you're going there and you're getting prepared to win, because obviously that's kind of been what's on everybody's mind, it's kind of environment. And especially on the way back, you're exhausted, you're tired. All you want to do is get some sleep. There's not going to be any real time for you to get some good study hours in.
All right. And game day counts for only 3 hours. Aren't you playing the game for 3 hours? What about getting taped up and getting ready for the game and doing press interviews after the game? Where does all that count?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. When I was doing my testimony, we had, you know, the countable hours that we put into the NCAA, and then we overviewed kind of what were the actual hours. And they only counted, I think, 3 hours on that Saturday for the game. But the game, we played Michigan, and actually went into overtime, and it was, you know, closer to probably 4, 4.5 hours. And that didn't count warm-ups, that didn't count traveling to the stadium that morning, that didn't count traveling after the game. So what really were the actual hours was around 20, 23 hours, and they only counted 5 hours for that whole weekend. You can see the discrepancy.
All right, so is that really the crux of the problem, that you guys are working, if you will, 50 to 60 hours a week? You're being told, no, you're really working only 20, and we're not going to pay you even for the 20.
You know, it's that, you know, everything that we're doing, you know, we fit the description of an employee. And that's exactly what the regional NRRB ruler decided with us, that we are indeed employees and that we deserve labor rights under the labor law. So that is essentially what's going on. You know, we put in a lot of work. We're paid in the form of a scholarship, and we have to follow all these rules and policies. And we deserve the rights that every American and employee in this country deserve.
The local attorney, or the state attorney here in North Carolina, Bob Orr, he's representing a couple of players who say they did not get the education that they deserved and were promised. And in talking about the 20-hour rule, he said that might as well be a piece of Swiss cheese. It has so many holes in it.
Seriously.
So where did this 20-hour thing come from?
I have no idea. You know, I know there was that big media thing with Michigan where they exceeded the 20-hour rule, and they had some sanctions put on them. But I think it's the NCAA's kind of way to make it seem that they're limiting how much time you put towards your sport, when in reality there is no limitations. You know, the things that they count are ridiculous, and the things that they don't count should be counted. So it's their way of to make it seem that they're doing a lot to protect the players from putting in too much time towards their sport.
Kane, I want to come back to another quote from Walter Byers. Again, he's the former head of the NCAA. He says, these programs compel college athletes to perform like professionals without anything near commensurate compensation. In the marketplace, such practices run counter to standard labor ethics. In an educational context, they affront common sense. So this is the former head of the NCAA saying, this is really a system that doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. And we point to that in almost every case that we've been in and every study that we've done. And the guy who created the NCAA and was the first executive director is now telling you the problems with the NCAA and what actually is going on. And people still kind of want to look past it, and the NCAA still wants to act like what they're doing is right and that they're taking care of the players. So it's pretty ridiculous.
So can you work within the system and get change, or is it going to require Congress to intervene? In the final 30 seconds that we have, what's the solution?
We're going to have to win in the courts, honestly, and we're already doing that. You know, obviously we've won the NLRB ruling at the regional level, and then we're hoping that we're going to win at the national level. And then also these big antitrust cases that are in the courts right now. O'Bannon had a big win, which got appealed. And then also this Jeffrey Kessler case, which is coming up. So these are going to be the big cases that are really going to crack open everything. Everything is really relying on that. So the NCAA is scared right now, and they're actually in D.C. lobbying for antitrust exemption. The states of Ohio and Michigan have they passed bills prohibiting student-athletes from unionizing in those states. So, you know, we're hoping that we can win in the courts without the NCAA and their member schools lobbying and then getting these laws changed before we could win.
All right, and that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Kane Coulter. Thanks to engineer Gary Kirk. And thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.